Oh, now let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Hello. Oh, here we are. I was cutting out there. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It is the 18th of January already. In the year 2006, and of course Alan Watt is with us this evening. There's some information that I've been wanting to share with you that it's about the First World War, folks, and it's a lot of information. I read the book about the Lusitania, but this is background information on World War One that. Of all the reading I've done, I hadn't, and maybe next week I might just be here and share that with you. Because, you know, we talk, especially, basically, when Alan and I are on together, Alan has taken us back into ancient history and shown us that this world is an illusion that's been created for us. I don't know how else to say it, because all of the stuff, all of the information that we have, that's been brought to us by Alan Watt, none of it, at least I know in high school history, but I'm sure in college, I don't care how high up the ladder in college you go, you're just not going to get it. And one of the reasons for me why more current history is important is it really confirms and verifies in my mind what Alan has been telling us all these past years. Let me first share our spiritual message with you tonight. This is from A Course in Miracles, from my little card deck, and it's from the text on page 278. Those who remember always that they know nothing, and who have become willing to learn everything, will learn it. I like that. And Alan Watt, thank you for being with us tonight again, my dear.
It's a pleasure, yeah.
Yeah, it always is. Well, folks, Alan has a website, and I went in it tonight, and it's going to be a pretty cool website. And I sent a message over to Darren so that he'll get it linked on Sweet Liberty, of course, and I will give it to you. But we don't want you to go in there yet. We want you to wait till this broadcast is over, please. And it's in its infancy, so there will be a lot more information coming to it. But I just think it's wonderful that a webmaster came forth and set this website up for Alan, the same way that Darren Weeks did for me when he called me a long time ago and said, I'd like to build a website for you as my contribution to the work you're doing. And Darren and I have been, and of course Darren has put hundreds and hundreds of hours into sweetliberty.org. Anyway, here is the new website address. It is Cutting Through the Matrix. Just like that. All lowercase, www.cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And so after this broadcast, or tomorrow morning, whatever, you'll definitely want to go in and check it out. And there's a message there, a welcome message from Alan, an introductory message. And Alan, okay, I'm done. Is there anything you wanted to add?
Just to thank the guy who's doing it, who can receive emails and comments and so on.
Oh, yeah, it's right there on the website in the contact section.
Mm-hmm. And he relays them to me, you know.
And he'll because it does say questions or comments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting, Alan. You know, people, a lot of times the questions that people ask
mm-hmm.
are the questions that a lot of people would have but don't think to ask.
That's right.
And then you'll get to respond, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. That is great.
Yeah. Well, it's well to have the time to do it and say things which we can still say.
Oh, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, because things are tightening down, I think, across the world with political correctness, you know, till it gets to such an extreme that we won't be able to say anything, and even the people around you will scold you if you say anything politically incorrect.
Yes.
It's happening already, in fact, through... in China, they call it social, the creation of social acceptance and non-acceptance. So they train the public through advertising and so on, through their culture, to react in a certain way when they hear certain words or whatever. And the people do adopt these things, so automatically they don't think, they just do. And they begin censoring each other in their speech and criticizing each other when they actually use those.
That's right, out of Orwell's 1984.
Yes, it's a scientific technique which is being used. It's used in the West as well. It's more subtle, but it's the same thing. Uh-huh. Until you're afraid to... they started it all with... the anti-smoking campaign to see how well they could introduce Pavlovian reactions into school children at least 15 or more years ago. And sure enough, children would, if they saw someone lighting up a cigarette even 15 or 20 feet away, would start coughing and waving their hand as though they were being gassed or something.
Yes.
And that was a conditioned Pavlovian response. And people who are in that type of response are totally unaware that they are under a form of reactive mind control. So they think they're being normal, and especially once their own peer group or age group do the same thing, they think they're all normal. And it's the same with certain words or topics or whatever. They will react the same way they've been trained to react. So barriers are built in their minds that they cannot cross themselves, and they will act as policing agents on those around them who try and use those, who do cross those barriers.
You know what that reminds me of, Alan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the religious programming.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I think I told you this. I think I mentioned it on the air one time when I was a member of the School of Metaphysics. And then that's when I was married to Nick Patru, and then he joined the school about 17 weeks after I had been into it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we both went to school on the same nights but different classes, and then after class we would stop to see Bob and Larissa, friends of ours, have a cup of coffee, and we got to talking outside the Bible, if you would, talking of spiritual things rather than religious things.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly Larissa, she kind of ducked her head a little bit and looked around like you would, as like if two little children were talking about something they're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, guys, I don't think we're supposed to be talking about this stuff.
Yes.
I don't, and she meant it, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they actually use, you'll hear more of that in the Guardian Helpers, I call them, from Plato's Republic, where they recruit their legal and law and army forces. So within army forces and police and so on, and in their colleges, you'll actually hear people say those kind of things at tables. I don't think we're supposed to be talking about this.
Right, right, exactly.
And that is...
Especially we're not supposed to question God.
Yeah.
And it's right there in the Bible, in the Old Testament, where Jehovah says, "You dare to question me?"
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Even though the New Testament says, "Seek the truth."
Yes.
So, these are ancient techniques that are understood by the culture creators, because culture is not normal that we have. We think it's normal because we're born into it, and even during our lifetime we watch it being altered, and we very few people catch on to the fact that there are masterminds behind the alterations. And Plato, thousands of years ago, over 2,300 years ago, said that there are no grassroots cultural changes. He said if there were something to come from the grassroots, it could create such amazing chaos through association to the next thing, to the next thing, then the order would lose control.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so therefore all cultural changes are implemented from the top down and authorized.
You know what that reminds me of? When the CDR, the Council on Domestic Relations,
mm-hmm.
was formed back in, 1992. Of course, I've mentioned this on the air, you know, that we were working politically at a state level, stopping the introduction or the passing of constitutional convention resolutions, etc. And people began to become very, very attention and focused. It was, we had a national network that was just phenomenal. And they became very focused at the state level. And they began contacting state legislators. And they weren't contacting the U.S. Congress. And, you know, before then, when I was a C-SPAN junkie, that's what all my action alerts were, because I was so brainwashed, you know, by the phony conservative literature that I got, that we were all supposed to be contacting our state, our U.S. senators, our U.S. reps, petition the president and all that stuff. So I was sending out all these faxes saying, call your congressman and here's a message to give, and call this one and call, do this, and please. Well, then we quit. And 93, 94, and 95, we were focused, very, very focused on the state level. And one of our networkers in Washington State, his U.S. rep had been, I say, put into office by grassroots. I don't know how vote fraud was, I don't know if it was his control then or not, but his name was Nethercutt anyway. And he seemed to be responsive and listened to the people. And Fred had a very good working relationship with his local office. And they'd even call him and ask him to research certain bills and stuff. Anyway, Nethercutt took his local office staff to Washington, D.C., and just to give him, you know, a view of what was going on. And so I asked Fred, I said, well, what's the word? What's going on? He said, they're very nervous. They can't figure out why they're not hearing from their constituents, and they wonder what the heck's going on out here. And I know it was because so many people were focused at a state level, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way they remedied that, they got, Buchanan running for president.
Yeah.
And after that, everybody just jumped on the Buchanan wagon, and that was the end of it. That was the end of it. Everybody was back on line, their line.
Yeah. This is a sad part of how control is not so difficult as you'd imagine. If number one, it's your system and you own all the money in the planet,
yep.
and you can hire as many think tanks and you're the top of all the secret societies and so on. So you have a chain of command in every direction. It's not difficult when you understand the psychology of the masses. It's human behavior. It's basic tribal psychology which they exploit. And as Albert Pike said it too, basically, that they always give the masses their hero, regardless of what side they think they're on.
That's right.
And then Weishaupt said the same thing. Oh, foolish man, what can you not be made to believe? And then there's a movie put out called Chicago. I don't know if you saw it. It's a kind of dance-type, 19-roaring-20s-type movie about a woman who murders somebody trying to get to the top into the stage music arena.
Uh-huh.
And at the very end, she's on stage with another ex-murderess. They both got off with the murders by the use of the press and Hollywood-type promotion, and how they played even the juries to get off with it with very good lawyers who knew the psychology of the ordinary people.
Yeah.
And at the very end, they're on the stage, and they shout to the mob and the audience, thank you, we could never have done it without you.
Oh, man, and they meant it.
And I thought, that's how everything works, you see. They count on the psychology of the masses, who never figure out that they're being manipulated into what they think are their own conclusions. They're simply being downloaded with programmed conclusions by a very masterful elite.
Yeah, very masterful.
And they've been trained from childhood to do so, you know. And they think everything is normal. That's why Lenin said, Lenin, and he was taught by the best moneyed men in the planet. And so he knew this. And he said, the masses must never know that there are 1,000 directions that society could take. He said they must think the one they're in now is a natural one simply because it exists. And that's how people are. Their parents don't know it's all fake and bogus and so masterfully manipulated. And they don't know to warn the children. The children take it for granted, therefore, that it is normal.
Yes.
And they grow up never questioning it. You know? A good example of the repetition of how the masses respond is shown very well in the movie called Titus. I don't know if you saw the movie called Titus with Anthony Hopkins.
No.
It shows you the general Titus bringing back the conquering army from a campaign into Rome, and all the masses are cheering and yelling, you know, and then right after it, I saw a replay of the ticker tape parade where the U.S. Army was coming back from Gulf War One, I think through New York, I guess it was, and all the ticker tape parade, and the people were being interviewed on the sidewalks, and they were saying the same things as the audience in the Titus movie, that we rule the world, we are the masters. They actually believe it, you know. Nothing changes with the masses. They're predictable. Their psychology is completely predictable.
Isn't that ugly, though? Isn't that pathetic?
It is.
Any person
uh-huh.
who lives in America and who really believed
mm-hmm.
that America was the land of the free and the home of the brave
mm-hmm.
to spurt out something like that, we are the masters, we rule the world.
That's right.
Oh, geez,
it's the new American century. That's the agenda. And so many people really believe it. And they take it as normal. Yes, we are the world's only superpower. We are the natural rulers of the world. And that those kind of statements have been yelled by the masses for thousands and thousands of years. As the same elite actually went down through the centuries, moving from country to country.
Yes.
And creating that's, empires.
That's the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it a long time ago, you referred to it as an international priesthood.
Yeah.
And what's really amazing to me is that once something like that is imprinted into your memory cells,
mm-hmm.
Alan, I cannot tell you how many books that I have read, I'm not talking novels, but books where the priesthood is always mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, it just kept popping up and And some of them were books I was rereading and had never noticed that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. To have total control over a society, the society must be predictable. And in times gone by, and these are in old books, you'll find little paragraphs or pages like one I have on London in the late 1800s where the British government paid 5,000 full-time spies just to spy on the people inside London. And they went round bars to see if the topics that they put in the newspaper were being debated in the bars and so on.
Wow.
And so that now they have the TV and they do polls to find out what we're talking about, and we're just parroting.
Oh, what? I think they do the same thing today.
Yes, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Somebody was telling me this was a few years ago
mm-hmm.
That they were in a bar.
Yeah.
And they saw this particular individual paying a lot of attention to their conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came and got into a conversation with them. And he said that he, I don't know if the guy told him or what, but whoever it was telling me this explained to me that basically that's what his function was to sit around in nightclubs, bars, restaurants, whatever,
mm-hmm.
listen to the conversation of the people.
Yes. And if you read Lawrence of Arabia, and in I think it's Seven Pillars of Wisdom, his own book, He was recruited at Cambridge University, trained in Aramaic, along with about 20 other guys, all from the aristocracy. And they became part of the Secret Service, which is above MI6, and only recruits from the aristocracy. And they were heavily funded by the government, sent over to the Middle East, and each one started a newspaper up and employed dozens and dozens of locals to go into the bazaars and coffee houses to listen, to the same technique, to see if the public were debating the topics which they were putting in the newspapers. So this is an old technique which is never, they've simply updated into the electronic era, but they still do the same thing. Are we regurgitating the thoughts that they give us and the topic, and we coming to the conclusions that they intend us to come to? And unfortunately, most people are. You know, I was thinking about how it's no different even in the middle and upper middle classes, where you go to these semi-formal functions and you stand and you sip wine. You don't sit down, you know, you don't know what chairs are there. And the women wear evening dresses and you mingle.
You mingle, yes.
You mingle, you see.
Yes.
And you're very polite and you change your accent to be accepted, you see.
Yeah.
And
you just wander into a group of people that are having a conversation.
That's right. And you don't have a good laugh. You titter, you know.
Uh-huh.
You only titter slightly. And that shows you that you have good breeding.
Yeah.
But when you listen to the conversations, it's the same thing, only updated in another strata, because they get in a conversation and they'll quote an author from a book, and the reply will be have you heard so and so? So they'll quote another author from another book, and all they're doing is regurgitating their downloading, you see.
Yeah.
They have no original thoughts of their own.
You know what that reminds me of, don't you?
Yeah.
Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
You just described the scenes that she described in the book.
Uh-huh.
And how every time a book came out, it was the popular book, everybody had to read it.
That's right. What's amazing about Ayn Rand, because I think she was a mistress to one of the Rothschilds at one time.
Philippe or something like that?
Yes, and also, I mean, she came out of Russia and went straight to Hollywood and mingled with the big boys. So doors opened, and so she was sent out with a purpose.
Yeah.
And even the followers who hailed her as almost a goddess did not realize that all her heroes were men who were geniuses in a sense, and who had the world to fight, the static mob mentality once more, to wade through the mob to get to the top, and it was their right to do so. And they thought that's only right, that's the American way. But they didn't realize she was talking from the Rothschild type perspective.
Right.
If you have all the money in the world and the power, then why shouldn't you re-alter the world to suit yourself as your right to do so?
Yes, but the way she wrote it, see, was...
From the little guy, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. It was cleverly done.
Yes, it was.
But that's all you have to do is to change, well, okay, how about Rothschild? Doesn't he have the right to remake the world the way he wants to, if he's the genius with all the money and has proven himself? And they forget that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
There's always another side to the heroes they give us, if we think for ourselves, which most people don't.
Well, you know, Alan,
yeah.
That's why if we think for ourselves,
mm-hmm.
Before we learn, and there always has to be somebody out there, and there you came along and began to open our eyes to so many things, we really did think that they were our own thoughts.
Yes.
And we thought we were thinking for ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do. We're all trained that way, and most people on a daily basis bounce their ideas off their neighbors or friends or workmates. And because they'll all have the same opinions, because they've all had the same downloading from the media, they think they're normal. That's how they judge themselves. I must be normal because they all say the same things.
I know, isn't that a shame?
And
wanting to, quote, be normal.
Uh-huh. And again, as a tribal, as basic tribal psychology, you want to fit in the tribe. You want to be part of the tribe, you see. We don't realize that the masters who understood this stuff even thousands of years ago can exploit those natural traits for their own advantage. Yeah. So it's a science we're talking about that is not new. I have to laugh when they come out with stuff about mind control and breaking, you know, how they've broken through new levels of mind control. And this is nonsense. There's nothing new about it.
Right.
These are ancient, perfected techniques. And the trick is actually... see, all the rules of this game are contained in the Masonic book called the Old Testament. And the Black Book, you see, that's the book of the law. And you say, whose law? Well, the law of those who rule the system.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam was given, this is the allegory, this is all allegory of the system. Adam was given permission to name all the plants and animals in the garden. And if you understand that naming something gives you power over it. Yeah, that's why, of course, supposedly Moses asks, who are you? This invisible voice. And he says, I am that I am, because he was trying to get power over the deity, as you would over any genie out of a bottle. You must get its name, then you can control it. Well, a child, all children will ask his mum or his dad, you know, what's this, what's that? And the mum or dad will say, well, that's a tree. As soon as you say that and don't follow it up to explain the beauty or the magic, and I'm talking about the natural miracle of that life form in itself, that child won't think about that again. It's just a tree. He won't question it.
Uh-huh.
And he won't question anything else that you answer in a short, simple way. You must help the child to question, because he's giving you the beginning of what could be a whole book on one topic.
Yes.
But we simply give him short answers and leave it at that, and the child will never go there again. And all through his life, whenever he sees a tree, it's just a tree. And that is part of the way that parents then program their own children the same way they were programmed themselves. Or you give a grandchild money. I can remember my grandmother giving me two pennies. It was the first two pennies I'd ever had. And I couldn't figure out how this thing here could get me an ice cream, you know. and I asked about it too, and because the guy took the money, he gave me an ice cream, and I thought, wow, you know, this is odd. And I asked him about it. I says, why can I get what I want with this here? And no one had asked him that before.
Uh huh.
They thought money was normal simply because they were brought up with it. And technically, I guess most of my own generation went through the same experience but never asked about it as the why. You know, who said this is the way it's supposed to be? And why do we all accept it that way? Somebody gave it to us, and yet we think it's as natural as gravity. And even though we're forced by a law to go to school for so many years so that we can go out and earn that money. I mean, so money plays a major role in all of this, and yet no one tells us what it is or who creates it or who decided that's what we must use or why can't we make our own, you know.
Alan, do they have home ec in schools today?
I think they do, yeah.
I wonder what they do in home ec. I wonder if they learn how to thaw and nuke, you know, frozen chicken wings and stuff like that. I wonder if they're really teaching. When I went to school, we really got some good beginnings, you know, in cooking and sewing. But little girls aren't supposed to learn that stuff today, Alan.
I know, but the boys doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I do know someone, and he was doing babysitting and stuff, and he could bath the babies and all this. He was being taught that in that class.
Okay.
But the girls were taking woodwork and metalwork. They've changed everything. They really have. They've changed culture.
I know.
And it was deliberate. It was not a happenstance thing or, again, a grassroots thing.
In case we might have some new listeners here, new to Sweet Liberty website, if you go into the section, folks, the shadow government, It's on the left side sidebar under the issues.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773, and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
All right, we're back with Alan Watt. And something, Alan, that I noticed on the new website, CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, where your books are advertised. He's put up a sample page of each book. And I love that. Actually, I went in there because I was thinking I was just going to see a commercial, so to speak, for the book. And I thought, man, I'll tell you what would really be great is if they took an excerpt or a page or two out of the book and let people see what's in it.
Uh-huh.
He did that.
Oh, okay.
And that's great. Folks, once again, the new website that's been built for Alan Watt is at CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. And Alan, you may as well, right now, if you'd like to, you know, give them a little background on the books and how they can get them.
Yeah. Okay, there's three of them. There's Cutting Through 1, 2, and 3. They go through a lot of the ancient history of the ancient secret societies, which in modern times are loosely called masonry, because it's a tiered structure up into the noble orders and aristocratic orders. And so I follow this and the money trail and their symbologies and the meanings of the symbology, and mention their inner beliefs and inner religion, which they keep exclusively for themselves, and their destination, basically. because they've always known where they were going, and they've given references to this in more ancient times. Anything written after 1900 has been heavily censored. Prior to that, lots of the books were written by them themselves to each other, since they were the literate class. So older books certainly contain much more on the agenda, but they knew where they were going right into the 20th century, where they knew they were going to have at least two world wars, possibly a third for the Middle East, which is happening in the 21st century. So I follow this. So these books are available if you send an international postal order, which you can get from your post office, $25 each. And my address is Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T. The postal address is Site, S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. And the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. So that's Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Ontario, Canada, P3E4N1. And anyone wanting to phone me, they can get me at 705-695-0416.
Alan?
Yes,
We'll say the phone number once again.
Yeah, it's 705, and this is in Canada. 705 is the area code for Ontario. Then it's 695-0416.
Okay, something I did notice, too, on the website,
That
they ask people where your phone number was to please call in the evening.
Yeah.
It wasn't a cutoff time, and you might want to talk to the webmaster and ask him, because I remember a couple or 3 weeks ago, you said that, you know, in the afternoon is fine from, like, noon to 2 or something, and then in the evening up to 9 o'clock or something. I don't recall exactly what you said, but would you like to request that people call not after a certain time at night?
Yeah, especially after 10 p.m., and that's Eastern time.
Yeah.
And some people forget, if they're phoning from the West Coast, the time difference, so it's much later here, you know.
Yeah.
So, we have to sleep sometimes.
Yeah. You know, we were having a conversation, I think it was last week, and we were going to talk about it on the air, and then I wasn't on with you last week.
Oh, yeah.
But we were talking about the chemtrails.
Oh, yeah.
And you had seen something, it seems to me, I don't know if it was a documentary or what it was, but I told you that I had read, I thought this was relevant, I thought the guy was probably not too far off base here. He had evidently said this on Jeff Rentz's broadcast back in 98, that he believed the chemtrails program was a two-part program, and he believed that, he said that then, he said, and I'm not a prophet, but he just felt that there had to be more to it than then just spraying all this junk around, and what he was alluding to is the fact, because now he's saying that he believes that we'll be seeing an end to the chemtrails. He said, of course, he doesn't know if that means 2 months or 2 years, but that the basic work was done, has been done, is being done by the laying of the chemtrails. And you and I discussed this quite some time ago, that all the the biologicals and all the metals and et cetera are just wreaking havoc on people's immune systems.
Yeah.
Keeping the immune systems constantly geared up until it becomes exhausted.
Yeah.
And then he tied into it the news that was actually on network news and in newspapers, that they had they had dug up, they had exhumed, is that what you call it, bodies from the Spanish flu, and that they got the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading, I believe it was a newspaper article too, that, you know, they had sent this virus to several countries. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, one of the places where it was sent didn't reach its destination.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very concerned that some terrorists got a hold of this thing.
Uh-huh.
But he thinks that maybe whatever... And somebody said they don't know why it was called the Spanish flu, because that plague didn't start in Spain.
No, it started near Tibet.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Why'd they call it the Spanish flu, do you know?
Yeah, well, they were using Spain as to embark troops on that had taken part in the First World War to bring them back into Britain and America. And so that was a landing base, and of course they brought the flu in with them. And so because they were all concentrated there, so many people coming down with it in the same area, they simply called it the Spanish flu.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think the guy's too far off base.
Oh, it is. We know that barium, which is in these trails, and the aluminum oxides, continued use certainly does bring down your immune, it destroys your immune system. I think there's also another reason, though.
Destroy it, or does it just exhaust it, Alan?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, what?
Well, it's in your water supply. It's in the food you eat. You're breathing it in. I think everybody who's got at least a pair of eyes that's not square still sees the sky and sees them spraying, and we've watched it over the since at least 98 from big time. And so I think they've coupled it with HARP as well for the weather modification part.
Right.
But I think these guys, they kill so many birds with one stone. Because one of the theories that they had back in the 50s when they first discussed using chemtrails to modify weather with the use of barium and aluminum oxide, they said at that time that if this was absorbed by people, they themselves would in a sense be almost like walking antennas.
Oh, man.
And you see, because these are metal, these are actually metals which are very good for antennas, in fact, especially the aluminum. And they're using HARP, which is an ELF energy pulse, which we will pick up, as you know, in fact all life forms will pick it up, because I'm sure everything's contaminated now with the spraying. And they talked about HARP being able to use secondary signals, a carrier signal and a secondary signal, and if they want to, they can actually alter the moods of the people, whole populations.
Yes.
Make them very placid, content, or angry, or depressed, or whatever they want, depending on exactly which frequency they decide to use. And this stuff has been declassified in different areas. So since they were talking about it in the 50s, I think they're doing it now. So I think that's also part of it. And we do know that they've been drumming the old war drums to depopulate the planet big time for years now, from the League of Nations, then the United Nations. They have a Department of Population Control. They mean it. They mean they want to really depopulate the world in the 21st century and bring it down to sustainable development, as they call it, the fixed units of people who will not be allowed to increase their populations in these habitat areas. So I think all of this is interconnected, and it would make perfect sense that to release a particular flu when people are already debilitated health-wise would have the desired effect. We're dealing with people who plan the world under a form of a war strategy.
Yes, and we are the enemy.
We are the enemy, uh-huh.
Yeah. Alan, what do you know about EDTA?
EDTA.
It is an amino acid, yes?
Yeah,
It is used as an oral chelation. Well, I guess they use it also in the intravenous chelation.
Mm-hmm.
But I got an advertisement in the mail, and I actually, you know, wound up reading this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Now, I don't know if this is true, but what they were saying is that EDTA is a known, to purge the body of heavy metals.
Yeah.
And they said anybody who has amalgam fillings,
mm-hmm.
you know, has got, they have done evidently studies that 40, I forget the percentage
mm-hmm.
of mercury that they're finding in people's, systems,
mm-hmm.
but that the EDTA, that the FDA actually had okayed it as a detox. I guess we would call it a detox.
Uh-huh.
But of course, you know, what this basic thing was that they found that it also helps to clean out, you know, atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, et cetera.
Yeah.
But that the FDA doesn't ever mention that, you know, how good it is for the circulatory and the heart, et cetera. But, you know, now that you're talking about this,
yeah.
If there's any truth in this, EDTA would be a good thing to be taking, wouldn't it, Alan?
If there's truth.
I know, but I don't know how we'd find it out, but I guess we could do some research.
I do know that the major autism societies have been using different chelation therapies with some success, and they're probably the best ones to ask, because that's what they're doing, that they're using certain different types. They've experimented with different types.
Uh-huh.
Because these children, of course, they have the mercury in their brain.
Yep.
From the inoculations.
And they mentioned mentioned aluminum.
Yeah.
They mentioned several of the heavy metals
mm-hmm.
that this would detox the body of.
Yeah.
The word I'm looking for here, flush it, but
mm-hmm.
I guess that's good enough.
Yeah, and it's what it's supposed to do is bind these metals to it.
Yes, and then you just urinate them out.
Yeah. So the best ones to ask are the ones who have been trying all the types out there, and that's the major autism societies.
Maybe one or some of our listeners might be interested in picking up on this and doing some research on EDTA,
mm-hmm.
because if these heavy metals are deteriorating or damaging or destroying the immune system. Well, that was one of the reasons I guess I wanted to bring this up tonight,
mm-hmm.
is that it does behoove us to do what we can to keep the health of the body up in the most natural ways possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm a broken record on that, but, you know, the toothpaste you use, Alan.
Oh, no.
The shampoo that you use. I got an email, and I went into this website and started reading. This is just a organization that has been doing lab testing on commercial hair care, cosmetics, fingernail polish, lipstick. It is absolutely, absolutely unbelievable. The terrible toxic chemicals that people are washing their hair with, in other words, lathering their body with this stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, the skin is the largest organ in your body.
Right.
And everything that goes into the skin is taken right in. That's why they have sublingual, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Some of the little herbal and homeopathic remedies right under your tongue,
mm-hmm.
because it's taken into the system so cleanly. And so here's people. Here are so many people buying these commercial products, from the drug stores and the grocery stores and stuff without even having a clue, adding to what the damn chemtrails are doing, Alan.
Yeah, I know.
So I wanted to say that for any of our listeners who, you know, I got some really wonderful stuff. It's on, I bought a bottle of body lotion. From the grain bin, the health food store that I use. And, oh, my God, it was so wonderful. And everything in it, it's all herbs and everything. And it smells like almonds. It just smells so good, and it so makes your skin feel so good. But anyway, the lady that owns the store doesn't actually have an account with them, so I went in to find it myself. It's called Aubrey Organics. And, folks, if you're interested, I don't get anything for this. They don't even know I'm talking about it. And if they saw our website, they might wish I wasn't talking about it because we're so politically incorrect. but it's Aubrey, A-U-B-R-Y or R-E-Y, I don't recall. Aubrey Organics. And you can just find all kinds of products in there. You pay a little bit more for them. But to me, Alan, you know, the way people spend money today, a lot of it's frivolous stuff.
Yeah.
Like, okay, for me, example. I mean, I don't have money to throw away, and yet I subscribe to movie channels on my big dish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I pay almost $30 a month.
Yeah.
To watch maybe four or five movies a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm a good example. What I'm saying is we can give up certain things. You know, instead of throwing a case of soda in your shopping cart.
Yeah.
Forget it. Don't drink it. It's not good for you anyway, and it causes the children's bones to get soft.
Mm-hmm.
People can afford it if they will begin to look around and see where they're spending money they don't have to spend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's my sermon for tonight.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's well, all those soaps and things are byproducts of the oil industry.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
Well, they feed us at their waste, you see. And
well, let me tell you what I did, and this is for our listeners who might want to try it. I love patchouli, the smell.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some, you know, oil, patchouli oil.
Yeah.
Essential oil. Well, I got some light almond oil, and it's expeller expressed so that, you know, it's not expressed by any chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a light almond oil. I think it cost me $8 for about an 8-ounce bottle.
Yeah.
And I take that almond oil, I put it in a smaller bottle because you're supposed to keep it refrigerated after it's open. And I put it in a smaller bottle and I drop some patchouli oil in it, Alan.
Yeah.
And after my shower, that's what I'm using now. And it's so light that it doesn't mess up your clothes or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And your skin feels so soft and it smells. If you like the smell of patchouli, that's homemade thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's lasting me because it really, you know, it spreads nice.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things we can do. Instead of, you know, getting cream rinses for the hair, you can rinse with vinegar and it restores the pH balance to the hair.
Yeah.
That's an old thing that they used to. My mom, when she used to wash our hair, rinsed our hair with vinegar. And you don't smell like vinegar when you're done.
Yeah.
Because she put a little bit in a glass, put some water in it, ran it over our hair. But folks, this stuff that we're buying from the stores, the drug stores, the grocery stores, you've got to look and see what the heck you're doing, what you're putting on your body. Because you're getting it bad enough with these doggone chemtrails, but to be your own poisoner, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And that brings me, I told you that I read about the perfume called Poison.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually poison, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually poison.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a body wash, poison body wash. So you smell like poison when you're done with your bath.
Gee whiz, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, poison ivy.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Well, as I say, the thing is that you're up against such amazing conditioning through advertising and propaganda. I mean, you know people yourself who understand the problems with the toothpaste alone who still go ahead and use it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what they think really is you must be crazy because everyone else uses it.
You know, they don't, though. They just look at it. I've had this happen at least two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
They just basically look at you and they go, I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah.
And they smile.
Mm-hmm.
Keep using their fluoride toothpaste.
Yes.
You know, Chuck used fluoride toothpaste, Alan.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to throw his, he got Colgate, and I used to throw it out.
Uh-huh.
And then he started hiding it on me.
Yeah.
So I'd find it and throw it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we never talked about it.
Yeah.
I mean, we had P-Lou in there and, you know, toothpaste from the health food store. I don't know what it was, but he used, by God, he used.
In level one reality.
Level one.
Yeah, that's where most people are, is level one reality. That's the conditioned reality.
In other words, it doesn't hit a person. When they see a warning on a toothpaste tube that says, warning,
mm-hmm.
Keep away from children under 6 years old.
Yeah.
Now, we teach our children to brush their teeth soon as they start getting teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you swallow more than enough for brushing, contact a medical or poison center.
That's right.
For God's sake, Alan.
Yeah, but what in their head they say to themselves, well, they never put it out there if it was dangerous. That's what they believe in level one reality.
They never what?
They wouldn't think that the big boys would put it out there. You know, they're shepherds, the good shepherds, in level one reality.
But they don't believe it.
It wouldn't be put out there unless it was safe for you. That's what they believe.
Like the girl at the Radio Shack when I was talking to her about cell phones.
Oh, same thing.
And she said,
Yeah.
RFDA would never let us, or FTC maybe, would never let us use something like that if it was dangerous.
That's right. And as Brzezinski said in his own book, Between Two Ages, this is shortly the public will be unable to come to conclusions by themselves. He said what they will think about is what we tell them to think about through our media, magazines, newspapers, all reaffirming their thoughts for them. And he said what they will dwell upon is what we tell them to dwell upon. And if the media does not just casually mention something, they will never remember it. But if we tell them to worry about something or think about something, they will. That's how perfect.
And it is perfect.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It is perfect.
I mean, if a famous face on a 6 o'clock news came on, or Barbara Walters or whoever, and told you that she was stopping using this stuff and then went through the dangers of it.
Well, now, in the first place, she'd be off the air forever.
Well, she would, because she has a share in that company she works for her.
I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're dealing with amazing conditioning in level one reality, and that's your school, that's your birth to school, to work, to the 6 o'clock news reality. That's level one reality. And even those on shortwave and so on who think they're breaking out into, well, it's the moneyed system, or it's this group, or it's that group, they're still in level one reality. You don't get out of it until you see a much bigger picture.
Yeah, we're talking brain cramps too, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
I printed this thing out. It's just things that you say they give us, our heroes.
Uh-huh.
This was Miss Alabama in the 1994 Miss USA contest.
Uh-huh.
The question, if you could live forever, would you and why? Answer, I would not live forever because we should not live forever. Because if we were supposed to live forever, then we would live forever. But we cannot live forever, which is why I would not live forever.
Hmm.
Don't you love it?
And she didn't say, but I'm here to save the world.
Oh, Brooke Shields.
Yeah.
Now listen to this. During an interview to become spokesperson for federal anti-smoking, smoking kills. If you're killed, you've lost a very important part of your life.
Hmm.
Winston Bennett, University of Kentucky basketball forward. He says, I've never had major knee surgery on any other part of my body. And Mayor Marion Barry in Washington, D.C.,
Yeah. He
said, outside of the killings, Washington has one of the lowest crime rates in the country.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Quayle, I love California. I practically grew up in Phoenix.
Oh, Jesus.
The Iacocca. He says, we got to pause and ask ourselves, how much clean air do we need? We're out of time.
Yeah.
Alan, thanks, honey. You'll be back. Oh, maybe not Wednesday night, but maybe.
Okay.
And I'll be back Wednesday. Good night, folks. Thanks for being with us.
Good night.
In America, we value our liberty. But there's a new movement quietly being pursued by politicians that will take away our precious freedoms.